Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
If you look up Louis Ziska's name on the Department of Agriculture website, you won't find his biography. That's because after more than two decades working as one of the department's top scientists looking at how climate change affects plants, Ziska quit, saying the Trump administration was trying to silence his research. Louis Ziska is now an associate professor at the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University and joins us. Professor, welcome.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, let's start with the research. What was it that the Trump administration, you say, didn't want to get out?
We were looking at how rising carbon dioxide levels have a impact with respect to nutrition. And we wanted to focus on rice because rice is one of the primary staples globally. Prior to submitting the paper, of course, we have to get permission from higher ups at the national program level, and the paper was accepted. As part of the overall process, once the paper had been peer-reviewed and was getting ready to publish, the editor approached us and said, look, you know, we think this is going to get a lot of press. Would you mind doing a press release? And of course, we said, no, no problem. But after the press release was put in, we were told that, no, the conclusions of the paper were not supported by the data. If you had a problem with the paper, you would have done it initially, not something that you do after the paper's been accepted. So it indicated to me that they were not going to support the scientific findings. Even more than that, they went out of their way to touch base with other groups that were involved in this and also urged them not to do a press release. And to me, that was sort of crossing an ethical line in terms of what you can do.
Well, and I want to get to the politics of this in a minute. But first of all, what were the conclusions?
The conclusions were that as CO2 has been rising, if you look at the integrative nutritional content of rice, what we found was that the protein levels are going down, that key elements such as iron and zinc that are important for human health are also declining, and that at least for some of the data, we didn't have a chance to do this for all the different sites, but for the ones we did, what we found was that there was a drop in B vitamin content, and rice is an important source of B vitamins for many people in the world. And we focused on those countries in the world that were more than 50% of their calories come from rice alone. Countries like Bangladesh or Laos or others, at least 50% of your diet comes from only from rice. Mm-hmm. So those are the ones that we felt were most susceptible to the CO2-induced change. Now, these were data that were obtained in the field. They were data for CO2 concentrations that we are almost certain will happen before the end of the current century. So the fact that it's going to have an impact on the health or potential health of over 600 million, we thought was something that was obviously important.
Why does the climate and the carbon in the atmosphere have an effect on the nutrients in rice and other plants?
What we think is happening is that plants are very adaptable to their environment. They can't exactly pull up their roots and run away. Mm-hmm. So what they do is they change chemically. And what's happening right now is an unprecedented increase in carbon in the air. It's not keeping pace with other elements such as nitrogen and phosphorus and potassium that come from the soil. So what we're seeing in a number of different instances is that those compounds that require a lot of carbon may be benefited by the change in carbon. But those that require like more nitrogen or more phosphorus, in fact, may be going down. So when we looked at the nutritional profile of rice, what we found was that vitamin E, tocopherol, was actually going up. Now, that's a compound that is only carbon. So it may benefit by the rise in CO2, whereas something like vitamin B9, B12, which have a lot of nitrogen, were actually going down. So what this implies is not just for rice, but for all plants at the bottom of the food chain, is that as CO2 changes, they may be adapting in that in a way that's going to affect their basic chemistry. And that, of course, has implications for not only human health, but for all animals who rely on plants as their primary source of food.
And are all of those adaptations, as far as you know, going to be for the worse for human health?
Not necessarily. So if we see, for example, that vitamin E is going up, then that may have a benefit. But one of the things that's most worrisome about what we're observing is the change in protein. And what we find is that protein concentrations are going down across the board. Now, you can argue, and some have, that this change in protein is a result of breeding for higher and higher yields in crops. But we also went to the Smithsonian Natural History Museum, and you look at some of the samples that were taken 150 years ago, prior to the start of the industrial age. And we were looking at not people food, but we were looking at solidago or goldenrod. And goldenrod pollen is a major source of nutrition for bees, for pollinators. And what we found there was that in addition to what we had been observing for rice and other crops, is a similar decline in protein for the pollen. And that has implications for bee health and pollinator health as well. So we can't say it's universally awful. What we're saying is that plants, which are the basis of all life, are changing. And how they're changing is going to have implications not only for human health, but also for the environment as a whole.
So to the politics of this, the U.S. Department of Agriculture has denied having suppressed any climate change-related reports or information. And in response to your resignation, the department said that preventing the promotion of your study was not political, but was instead based on scientific disagreement. How do you respond to that?
If there was an issue of scientific disagreement, then prior to my submitting the paper, they should have come to me and said, oh, we don't think the science here is feasible. We don't think the science is appropriate. They didn't do that. They did it after it's gone through peer review. You don't do that after the paper's getting ready to be published. The people that disagreed with it, to the best of my knowledge, are not people that have any background in looking at climate change or carbon dioxide effects on nutrition. The person who contacted me to tell me about it was actually a soil scientist, not someone who had published in this area at all. So this doesn't sound like they're disagreeing with the science. It sounds to me that they're disagreeing with the outcome of the study and the fact that the study did not fall into what their political purview was. So it was very unusual. This had never, I've been with, as you mentioned in your intro, been with USDA for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. This had never happened like this before. I, of course, responded by saying, hey, let's meet, let's talk about this. And there was no follow-up meeting. There was no effort to come back and say specifically how what happened or why it suddenly at this point in the process was not acceptable. It made no sense.
Now, you're not the only government employee to recently leave over the issue of climate change. Do you think that you're going to have a bigger impact on this issue outside the government than you could inside?
The sad part is that I think I will, but the sad part of that is that there are very good people that are still at USDA, good scientists, good technicians who can make a difference. But if you're not allowed to work on this, if you're steered away from doing this kind of research, then what impact are you going to have? And yet, at the same time, you have, in real terms, you have farmers that are dealing with unprecedented rainfall. You have farmers that are dealing with unprecedented pest threats to their production. And you have, on the other hand, folks at the Agricultural Research Service. They're good people that can do a lot in this regard. But you're not going to use them because it's politically inconvenient to begin to address a problem that the administration believes is not a problem. It just isn't right. This is what USDA and other scientists at the federal level are there for, is to help address problems of national importance. To ignore those problems, to say, oh no, that's political, that's not science, that's not evidence-based, I don't have the words to express why that's so wrong, why that hurts so many people. Not just the scientists, but ourselves as a country, in terms of our ability to be a sustainable producer of major food crops for the world as a whole. Yes, I can, from a personal level, I'm very, very grateful for Columbia to take me in. But from a larger perspective, I think it's going to hurt the research that needs to be done overall to begin to address these challenges to food security.
That is Louis Ziska, who is now an associate professor at the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University. He quit his job as a scientist at the Department of Agriculture. Louis Ziska, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And you can hear more of our stories from Covering Climate Now at hereandnow.org.